Welcome to Alpha Marketing, your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your small to medium-sized business. Hosted by Aaron Shishilla, CEO of Wolfpack Advising. Now, let's learn how to dominate your market.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Marketing Alpha. It's been a while, but today's guest is one of the most credentialed people in the pest control industry. He's a board-certified entomologist. He teaches classes at the University of Florida. He's a consultant whose clients include cruise lines and country clubs, as well as working across the globe. But he's a certified expert witness who's testified in multi-million dollar cases. Joe Jonovich is as deep as it gets in this industry. He works closely with the best pest control businesses nationwide, and he's here today on Marketing Alpha to share some of his secrets. Welcome, Joe, to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Great intro. I'm going to have to put that on my website. I love that. So very flattering.
Yeah. Well, it is Marketing Alpha, so we got to like market it up, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
I know I gave you a pretty packed intro, but if there's like one word or phrase that actually captures what you do today, right now, what do you think that would say?
Right now, I'd say the best way to describe what I do in layman's terms is I'm a freelance technical director. So I am a board certified entomologist, and I do pest identifications, write protocols, but there's so much more to being a technical director. So I work with a lot of mid-size companies that they don't have their own technical director, but they need protocols written, agreements reviewed, help on large bids. So freelance technical director pretty much sums it up in a couple words.
Gotcha. So tell me the origin story and the background of like how you actually got here and you got all these awesome accreditations and you got that huge, amazing intro from Marketing Alpha podcast.
All right. Well, it all started with I am second generation in the pest control industry. So as I know you are also, but I grew up, as preteen even, I was going out on jobs with my father. And even if it was a lawn and ornamental account, he'd say, grab the blower, blow the fertilizer off the driveway. And as soon as I can, hold a handheld blower, I was doing stuff like that, helping him out and just riding along for the free lunch. So that's how I got sucked into it. And as I got a little older, I realized that Florida heat hits you hard. And he emphasized, go to college or you'll be doing this the rest of your life. It was kind of viewed as a labor position. And so I worked hard. I went to University of Florida and I was a mechanical engineer student. I made it halfway through my junior year, but probably about beginning of that junior year, I needed a job, something flexible around my school. And I got a job in the entomology department and I knew bugs and that kind of was my in being in the pest control. And I didn't realize they're trying to suck me in just as much. So I started doing termite research and started seeing, hey, there's some science to this. There's a lot of cool stuff with these bugs that we can do. It's not just pushing a spreader in the Florida summer. And so that was where halfway through my junior year, they talked me into coming back and switching. And that's a major switch from an engineering basis with physics and chemistry to biology basis. It's science, but opposite spectrums. But made the switch. It just slowed me down a couple semesters. And I got my undergrad. I stayed on under Dr. Faith Oy and got a master's degree. And in 2003, I finished that. So kind of, I guess almost older than dirt here. I see the things online of if you're born in the 1900s with the dinosaurs, but it makes me feel old nowadays. But 2003, I started my own pest control company as I was doing a PhD. And that company just started growing quick. And one of my regrets, I never finished the PhD. I just started making a little more money and doing a little less PhD, a little more money, a little less PhD. But I ran that company till about 2010. And I had an unbelievable offer. Couldn't say no to, sold the company. And I worked for one of the manufacturers, MGK, for 1 year as their Florida sales rep. So I kind of learned the manufacturing side, more what's out there. And I only did that for a year. And Hewlett Environmental Services was one of my top clients. And Ron Box, one of my mentors and predecessors there, he was retiring. And so he said, hey, Joe, we're looking for a replacement as technical director. And definitely, I could say that's a challenge for being in a top 20 pest control company and being their technical director. But I took that position and I did that for about 5 years. And in 2015 is when I left that to go out on my own as a consultant. And that was a completely different change. Some things were similar, as in, it's going to be where I'm doing the same type things, but I'm going out, I'm finding these small, mid-sized companies that don't have a technical director, but they still need contracts and agreements written that are tailored to their pest control business, or they need a procedure for how do you kill German roaches? You know, not just what somebody told them on Facebook, but what actually works. And then, of course, you know, in the worst-case scenario, if they're getting sued and they need somebody to come into court and help defend them doing the expert witnessing. So it was back to kind of running my own business, completely different pace. But all that working with bugs and working with people that I love, and that's just been growing over the last 10 years. And, you know, that's where I'm at now.
Wow. And of those different segments, I feel like there's a ton of different things there. The first one being the science. So there's science of that. I think there's also the labor part of it, of actually doing the work and going out to it, which, you know, obviously, I did it growing up with my parents' company and everything else. I kind of miss it these days now that I'm sitting behind the desk every single day. But you have that part of it. And then you also have this consulting piece in your own business. Which of those do you think like you enjoy the most right now? Like, what do you get the most satisfaction out of? Is it the science? Is it the labor? Is it the like, what is it?
I enjoy it all. I mean, not to be cliche, but it is kind of like that three-legged stool type thing of they help each other. Last week, I spent most of the week in Alabama going in inspecting houses for termite cases where the pest control operator went in and the house has termites and now they're getting sued. So you're going in, every case is different. And you know, one of them, it didn't turned out not to be too bad, but they said, hey, be ready for it. It's a flooded crawl space, but you got to go in there and see where the termites are coming from. And kind of pride myself on being able to get in further where the state inspectors will say, no, we're not going in there or anybody else. And that ties into that science of why are the termites there? You know, where did they come from? You know, and even not just the entomology science, but the building construction. And that ties in the engineering background of how are the termites getting in this structure? Do they have ground contact? Do they not have ground contact? So it all ties together. And for what I enjoy the most, I'll say it does change. Probably the things I'm not doing as often. If I haven't gone in a dirty crawl space in a long time, you know, it does make me smile to go in there and do that type work. I enjoy going to the meetings and learning new science and what's out there too. So, and of course, you know, working with the people too, doing the training classes.
Yeah. Yeah. I can say for myself, I probably don't miss going in the crawl spaces. So you can have that.
Yeah, a couple a year, I'm okay with that. It's a lot of fun. But you know, you come back with some pictures and you show people like, hey, you remember how we kept saying in training, this is how you need to do your treatment. And you come back with some stories and some pictures and this is why we told you that. And so that's where I mentioned like that three-legged stool. It all ties in together. A lot of people learn really well from other people's mistakes. So when they see, wow, this is real, we can get sued if we don't do this right. So it all ties in together really well.
It sounds like you were pretty much born for this job. I mean, you were born into this thing you have the three legs. You have the labor background, you have the science background, and now you have the whole piece with the business background and consulting with so many businesses. I feel like you're absolutely born for this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I love the training and education. You know, that ties in kind of with that business side on that third leg and just seeing people who want to learn, you know, and you know, in Florida in particular, we've got about 40,000 technicians, and we probably see coming to training programs, whether mine or University of Florida or other ones, only a few hundred of them per year to maybe a few thousand. And a lot of people just take the quick, easy training to get the certification that they need to continue their license or ID card to the next year. But I love seeing people who want to learn, who want to lift up this industry and do better, and I'll do everything I can to help.
Mm-hmm. So let's continue on a little bit and get into specifically Florida. So you went to the University of Florida. I'm sure with a lot of the classes that you're doing, a lot of the training that you're doing, I know you're very local to Florida when it comes to a lot of the training. And obviously, I've seen, following you on social media, I've seen a lot of the posts that you're sharing in terms of the new termites that are showing up in Florida and the crossbreeding and everything else. It seems that Florida is like genuinely one of the like hardest pest control environments. What do you think makes it part of that hardest pest control environment? What do you think in terms of the pest control industry, how it affects versus some of the other states? And we'll get into a little bit later of the marketing side of that, but how that actually changes the business side of everything too. So can you give me some insight into Florida specific for you?
Yes. And I'm based out of West Palm Beach. So on the northern end of South Florida, my work, as we mentioned, does stretch around the country, even into other countries. Mostly I spend my time in the southeastern United States. So Formosan central territory for that. Bed bugs, German roaches can be anywhere in the country. But for Florida specific, some measurements, Florida's about 30% of pest control in the country. And you think about those 40,000 technicians we have here. Some states have 300. So wow. There's so much pest control concentrated here. Now, some people want to avoid Florida. They say, oh, there's too much competition. You know, if it's 5,000-6,000 companies and 40,000 technicians, they want to go somewhere rural, you know, in the central country. But then you don't have many customers either. So what keeps Florida towards the top of that list is we're right on the edge of that subtropical line, that I-4 corridor between Tampa and Orlando. Below that, you get to that true subtropical climate where it's rarely going below freezing. So a lot of bugs and other pests can overwinter. Drywood termites, for example. The Formosan termites are a little more temperate. They're actually, that's where we get those up into Alabama, New Orleans. I've been doing more work up in Charleston, South Carolina. There's been some reports in Virginia, but they're staying fairly coastal when they get to those northern states. But if you think of Florida, it's 100% coastal, no matter where you're at. You're no more than a couple hundred miles inland.
And what about those new, like, crossbreeding termites? What are those? How are those different? Yeah, the hybrid stuff. How are those any different? How are those changing?
Okay, and the hybrid that's in the news right now, that is a cross between the Formosan termite that I mentioned was it more of a temperate species of the Coptotermes, and then there's a very close cousin is going to be the Asian termite. And the Asian is a little more tropical. If you look at some of the distribution maps from the University of Florida, it's just the coastal areas in South Florida, a little bit up into the Tampa side, but they're going to be more tropical. The theory is as they interbreed, it might make them stronger. A lot of times where you get that interbreeding with the genetic information, it's a little bit stronger. Maybe we'll get an Asian termite that can even go further north. So far it looks like they do feed about the same. And both Asian and Formosan termites are both extremely aggressive. I'm not too concerned personally about the hybrid itself. It makes great news articles and headlines. But whether it's the hybrid, the Asian, or the Formosan termite, you're having a bad day with any of those three. Their colonies are about 10 times the size of our native termites. And if you kind of think about that, that means that 10 times the size is roughly in 1 month they can do the damage that native termites do in a year. So if a customer's ignoring it for 5-6 months, or maybe even a whole swarm season where they say, hey, they swarmed last May and we didn't do anything about it, and then they're calling you this May, they've let a whole year go by. That's equivalent to over 10 years of damage of native termites. And I admit there's a lot of variables there. So, you know, true scientists will be twitching in their seats and, oh, you can't say that. It's, you know, there's going to be, well, how do we know how many are feeding on the house? Maybe they're feeding on 5-6 things, but just for a rough analogy, 10 times the colony size, 10 times the damage. And that's most of the lawsuits these days are for Formosan and termites or Asian and hybrid.
So let's segue this over into, I believe you're a big firm believer in the IPM integrated pest management stuff. And we could talk about roaches too, and talk about bed bugs and everything else that you're an expert in, but we could also continue talking about termites, because I love talking about termites. But how does this, do you think, affect pest control businesses and the mindset they need to get into when kind of presenting IPM to customers? Because I don't think, and you could probably correct me if I'm wrong here, the general consumer, the general household person has no idea what IPM is, and kind of only calls a pest guy when they have a pest problem, you know, not before. It's, hey, the whole house is eaten, now I have a problem. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And IPM was first published in 1959, so it's been around a long time. And there is a push. I think IPM is still much more common, but there is a push to change it to APM, assessment-based pest management. And for the most part, the ideas are almost identical. Assessment-based, if you ask somebody on the street, hey, you know, what do you think assessment-based pest management is? They're going to say, well, you're going to go in, you're going to assess the problem, you're going to come up with a solution, and you're going to do it. And yeah. And IPM, if you ask somebody on the street, what is integrated pest management? They say, what are you integrating? Is it like the schools or what's going on here? It doesn't make much sense. So sometimes just terminology like that can help out quite a bit. And I am seeing more of IPM coming up through multifamily housing, hotels, businesses. You know, the lawyers, good or bad, you know, we've got the lawyers to thank on a lot of that people are raising awareness and, hey, we've got to do more to prevent pests. And probably the hardest part is that there is no one way to do IPM or APM. So most companies, pest control companies, that is, if you ask them, are you doing IPM? They're going to say yes. And spraying chemicals, pesticides, technically that is part of IPM. Now it should just be a smaller part of it and you're using all your other tools in your toolbox. But where we have challenges is, you know, is somebody just going in and spraying baseboards for very low dollar versus somebody going in using all the latest and greatest tools and chemicals that's in their toolbox. And then, of course, we've got to get that to the consumer. So what does the consumer see? Typically, they see what's sitting on the shelf at Home Depot or the Publix grocery store. And typically, you know, it's not a packaged IPM plan. It's a can of Raid. You know, just spray this mm-hmm. and your roaches will die like they do on the commercial. So that's where there is a lot of or are a lot of challenges for us to get that across to the consumer and prove to them that, hey, this does work. This is effective.
So are you team IPM or APM? Hard hitting question.
I think I'm on APM just for if we can get the consumers to understand that, you know, if they could just off the street, you can grab somebody and they can figure out what it is. Then that's one less thing we've got to teach them. We can focus on the specifics of the roaches, bed bugs, termites, etc.
I would agree with you. Integrated pest management. What's integrated? I'm in the same boat. But assess. Yeah, exactly. You were right when you explained assess. That made sense.
Standpoint. Yeah. How would you market IPM?
Yeah. How do you? My question goes to, well, no consumer knows what IPM is. And so as a pest control company, if I'm going to put, I do a lot of integrated pest management, that, you know, when you're in the industry, that sounds super great, right? You sound awesome. You sound like the pest control company that in the area that every homeowner, whoever should use. But the general consumer, I think, doesn't have the education to understand what that inherently means. But when you talk about APM instead, and you can define it in that way online, I think that makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to hopefully grab consumers a little bit more to where they can kind of like retain that information, remember it. And, you know, everything for me when I'm looking at this stuff is like, what are consumers searching for? And at what point are they searching for things? So is there a point that we get consumers searching for instead of like termite control or termite treatment or tent my house to something like APM, right? Which I think is a huge long shot, but it's possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And interesting related to that too, is I've got clients, regular pest control companies that are retainer clients I work with every month. They're changing their company name from, you know, whatever it is, you know, XYZ pest control, or excuse me, XYZ pest management. They're changing back to XYZ pest control. And that amazes me because over decades, we always wanted to think we're at the cutting edge and the names went from pest control to environmental services and pest management and big fancy names that what do they really mean? But then now in the world of Google, what are customers actually searching for? They're searching for exterminator and pest control. So it's interesting to see companies actually change their name to go after the consumer.
What kind of compounding on that, Joe, is what I find even crazier is the search terms on like what's dominating varies by the region. as well. Mm-hmm. So like for some areas, it might be termite control. Some areas might be termite exterminator. Some areas it might be, you know, termite treatments, whatever it is. It totally varies based on the local market conditions, which is kind of interesting as well. And you might have some search volume or people, you know, knowing it as termite control, termite treatment at my house or whatever within other markets or whatever. But maybe that primary one is termite control that they're searching for or looking up. Let's segue into this. When you're consulting with pest control companies and you're talking about like APMs, or you're talking about building them like a plan, and a lot of the documentation for how they should be doing something as a technical director, how do you think that conveys over to like, hey, this is how you should be doing the work, this is how you should have your documentation? How does that convey over to this is how you're going to present it to the consumer? Or maybe like, your website contains this information, I would suggest changing it to have, you know, this terminology or anything else. Do you give those types of suggestions?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and like what your website says, is it right or wrong? That's where I do see the websites are often run by the marketers, and the entomologists have very little say. So I do have several clients that on a regular basis, they've learned, they say, hey Joe, here's a new batch of articles to go up. And it's interesting. And you see a lot with the chat GPT on what is out there and what they're saying. And maybe they did just, you know, use AI to put it all together. Maybe they did research it a little bit deeper on their own. But it does reflect that kind of AI where it's 80% great, and then it's 20% just garbage that is put together. I'm trying to think some of the last ones. I think one of the last ones that I reviewed was with stinging insects, and they had some good stuff. Once again, 80% was great, but then it was really heavy on put up the fake wasp nests, you know, to scare away the paper wasp, and they had a few other just the old wives' tales, or the penny and the gallon Ziploc bag, like you hear more with flies, and just right. things that when you get garbage all out on the internet. And then you have something like AI that's going to go scrape the internet. You know, it's going to scrape some poo into that collection cup a little bit there too. So I will see that come up quite a bit, and I'll review that, and we'll help get that information to the customers. There is a big push with online and the websites, even if you're a pest control company selling your service, to educate the general public, not just your customers, but put it on your website, show that you're the expert in your field. And you know what, if you want to take care of stinging insects, these are the steps you need to do. Here's the species that are in your area that you'll commonly encounter. Here's how to tell them apart. Here are the best treatments. And oh, if you don't want to do it yourself, call us. It's kind of just to summarize it. And I'm sure that's probably what you see a lot of pest control companies doing.
Yeah. I think, you know, majority of pest control companies actually don't put in enough information on the website. And I think that's ultimately, from my perspective, where it comes down to, and probably a lot from your end too. Like if you're a business owner for a pest control company, you are probably so busy, maybe running routes, maybe you're actually working in the office or whatever else, training, doing HR stuff, whatever it is. But then you hire a marketing agency, such as Wolfpack or anybody else. You hire a marketing agency to help take care of your website. Depending on the marketing agency that you get, I know Wolfpack, you know, part of our specialty is going to be pest control businesses. But whatever marketing agency you hire, you know, they're hiring specialists who are content writers, who their passion and their love is going to be content writing. It's going to be writing actual really good content, doing stuff that's SEO optimized, whatever else. It's not pest control. It's not. So yeah, when it comes down to the articles themselves, you know, they don't have the expertise that is of the pest control. And one of the interesting things that I'll find, Joe, is when business owners actually sit down and spend the time to either work directly with their marketing agency or just give like a document of like their own expertise about their local market and share that with a marketing agency or put that on their website, the amount of visibility, the amount of rankings, the amount of more like visibility on AI platforms and everything else, because we're tracking all of that, goes through the roof because it is unique expert content. And I'm sure, I think I've seen a lot of your articles too online. I'm sure like a lot of your articles are going to get shared because you were just naturally put as this authoritative person on social media, on online for the pest control industry, especially in Florida.
Not even just me, but if it is something by a live person, that's where, you know, Google and their AI versus your AI, they know what's AI and what's not. So they can see a lot of that coming, and it does help everybody boost a little bit higher. And not just, you know, a board certified entomologist, but even you hit on a big one there with the company owners of just that information that they've got in their head. And my wife, Sarah, and I, who works on a lot of the agreements with me for clients, we were discussing that same kind of thing of, you know, some of the struggles we have will be writing agreements or these procedures for companies. And we don't want to just give them a procedure. This is how you treat German roaches. Because if we do that, my experience is they're not going to use it because it doesn't match what their company is doing. So that's where typically we have a process. We're going to meet with them. You know, all right, what's working? What's not working? You know, tell me the good, the bad, the ugly of, you know, say it is German roaches. We use that for example. And I'll tell them some examples of here are your options, what you can do. And if we come up with something that improves their treatment plan, and then the key where we come in is put it in writing. And then we get that in writing, they're going to follow it. They're going to use it because it's their plan for XYZ pest management. And they're going to make sure everybody does it instead of like, well, you know, that's good information Joe wrote, but we're not going to do that here. You know, what is a technician here? You know, they hear that, hey, that's not really something we have to follow. So on the procedures, that's something we work with them pretty close to get the company procedures that match them. And on the German roach example, I've got clients in the past that are, you know, you could say more old school, and where they're like, well, I don't like those baits. They're messy and we just want to use sprays. But work with them, go through the options and the science of what's out there, and they're using the non-repellent sprays that are out. And as long as they're putting it out right according to label, not hurting anybody, contaminating anything, you know, it's very effective and it's working for them. And then on the opposite spectrum, I've got clients that say, we don't use any sprays indoors, we're 100% bait. And we've worked out bait rotations that if one bait doesn't work, another one will fill in, and it's effective for them. So, you know, there's 100 ways to kill a German roach. So we can get that going. And then back to your original question, how does that go to the next level? Once we have those company procedures tied down, you know, that's where the marketing team on the website, they can take a lot of that and build that into a website. And that's where once you get that framework, once you get that framework together, that's where the ChatGPT can build that up and fluff it up and add a lot more information into it of what you're going to do.
That is freaking amazing. Everybody just needs to work with you for that. I mean, to just have you in your corner, like I'm serious, to have you in their corner, to be able to walk through like, hey, yeah, this is my process. You know, I need something that is going to work for me. I could see how that's just so huge for these companies. So huge.
And you hit it on the head where you said, where they're so busy, they're running around, they're trying to grow their business, and, you know, and they've got a tech got in a car accident or something else happened here, or a whole, it's a busy season and they're one tech short. Just, you know, how can we help them? And those are the conversations Sarah and I have had where it's in their head, like you mentioned, but yeah. You know, what can we do to just get the need to know information out of their head? And then we can help them and get it on paper. And that's kind of been our magic spot, that if we can do that, have a Zoom meeting and get some information once or twice a month, and then, all right, we'll take this back and we're going to go write two procedures for you. Or we're going to write a general pest control contract that actually matches the service you're performing. And then that's been a win-win where they're ecstatic because they, you know, they're willing to pay the bill. You know, money typically isn't a problem. It's the time is what limits these young operators.
So what I see is everybody that's listening to this podcast is going to work with you, Joe, and they're going to get those protocols and those protocols and those documentation for everything on how they need to do their treatments or make their adjustments. And then those pest control companies are going to pass it to Wolfpack, and then Wolfpack is going to be able to write the perfect content for their website. Is that everything? That's correct. And then put it on social media too. So then they become social media famous, just like you.
Well, and then we can just plan ahead and we can have it all done in advance and just push a button and say go, right?
There you go. Yeah. Then we train an AI agent of Joe that goes out.
There you go.
Yeah, we're going a little bit too far there. Okay, so I know you talked a little bit before we started the recording, and I want to hit on this, which was you named like three things that every pest control company like does wrong, or like the top issues. And I think one of them was routing. I think we talked a little bit about pricing or maybe packaging. Could you tell me like those three things of what you see like commonality wise, what they're doing wrong and what they should be looking at?
Okay. So focusing on growing pest management companies. So typically this is going to be about $500,000 to $2 million company that they're trying to get up to that next level. and they just want to grow. You know, if you're $500,000, you probably got two routes. Maybe the owner's one of those two technicians out there, and they're trying to grow, figure everything out. And with the business consulting I do, a lot of it is business coaching, and a lot of it even just comes into the basic. We'll start with the budget. You know, and a lot of people haven't done a budget in their life, their personal life, their business, and they're good at killing bugs. They work for a big company, got their license, they went out on their own, and they're doing everything the same. And as you start getting more than yourself in the company, it's harder to grow and manage without a budget. You know, you get zeros at the end of all the numbers, but the swings up and down have zeros on them too. So you got to be careful. So as I start going through working with them on budgets, the three big things that I see that just kill the young companies where they have zero profit. One is poor routing. Two is going to be poor pricing. And the third one is poor spending on marketing. And so I'm not putting a dollar figure on the marketing, but just where, you know, poor spending, the not wise about the choices. You know, they might have a $3,000 budget and they spend 15 grand a month for somebody to manage their marketing budget. They've got nothing left at that point. Nothing to spend on marketing, nothing for them to even manage. But they promised them, we'll get you $100,000 a month in leads. And that's where it's going to crash and burn. And maybe they signed a 3-year contract. So that's the ugly side on the marketing. Hitting the other ones, pricing. When a company starts out, a lot of times they'll do lower pricing. I'm okay with that. If you've got a plan that, hey, this is what we're going to do. Our industry average in our area is, say, $150 for quarterly pest control. You know what? Let's go in at $119 or let's go in at $99, you know, especially if they got a plan and they know our cost of service is $70. You know, great. Let's build up our business and we can raise prices later. But have that plan, you know, where a lot of companies, they'll start out, they'll just name a price and they don't know if they're making money or not. And then if you put that with the poor routing, you get somebody who starts a business, let's say they're in Orlando, Florida, and they say, I'm going to start a business. Well, I've got nothing to do now. I've only got 10 customers. You know what? Yes, I'll drive up to Ocala. You know, I'll drive down to Fort Pierce or over to Tampa and Lakeland and even Orlando itself with all the traffic. That's where they're stretched out too thin. And then even as they have those customers, they might not be routed very well. And there is a lot of good software out there, but it goes back to the time. So if you're using Pest Pack or Field Routes, Gorilla Desk, et cetera, and you're not going in there and routing it the way you should, then you might be going into the same neighborhood on 3 different times. I had one client he was out of Georgia. He had technicians that had commercial accounts, and the deal was you take our accounts, you take all our locations. So they had some that were 6 hours south of the branch. So minimum, you know, we're talking a 12-hour day for a technician to go down to these southern branches. And from North State all the way to South. Well, the kicker they had where finally it bubbled up to the surface was one day in that southern town, one truck is going down the road one way, and then the other truck is going another way, and the technician's jaws just dropped. You know, why didn't one tech have both of these two stops on their schedule? And just everybody doing their job of what's supposed to be done and not checking details and working together as a team between the office, the management, the technicians. But at least at that point, it bubbled up to the surface. Everybody realized, you know, hey, this routing is an issue. What can we do to improve that? So just to summarize again, you know, routing, pricing, and then marketing spend, you know, having a good budget and spending wisely. Those three things, if you got them in line, typically everything else kind of falls into place.
What do you think from a marketing standpoint, like from your end, what do you think works the best? What are your people seeing the most success with? And I'm really interested, like, if you get your company right and they don't have anything for marketing, what's your first step for your recommendation for them?
And that is the $1 million question you see everybody always asking. You know, what is the perfect marketing solution? And unfortunately, I can't just give just one. I see with my clients so many different approaches. And first off, even like you said, if they got nothing, well, how did they get where they're at? You know, let's start from the beginning. And maybe they do say, well, we're small town, we're word of mouth. We just grown to where we are. You know, first, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, let's even look at how many customers are you gaining? You know, assuming they're not flat, you know, maybe they're gaining 5%, but it's all word of mouth. Well, you know what? If that's gotten you to where you're at now and you're a $1 million company, you know, first, you know, let's start on that. Let's maximize that. So, you know, there are apps out there. You can do it internally where you maximize these customer referrals, you know, maybe even giving them some kind of bonus. You know, one of the big ones that always got me was somebody would go spend $150 per lead for Google. But then if a customer refers somebody, you give them a $20, you know, gift card. You know, it's like, no, give them $150, give them a free treatment, something like that. You know, if you phrase it this way, if they can give you 100 customers, you know, like Google, you know, wouldn't you be willing to pay them for that? And then that just makes a happy customer. When I had my business, I had some people that they would keep, you know, 8 or 10, where I said, I give them a free service. They keep 8 or 10 in the hopper. They're like, oh, how's it going? And, oh, you still got 6 free treatments. And at that point, I realized that, you know, the one client said, oh, okay, I'm good then for another year. And he was holding back. And I went, well, that's a mistake. You know, hey, I will cash out. You want a check? You want cash? You want a gift card? You know, hey, keep these coming. I will pay you for each of these things. So that would be the first thing I would see if they have nothing, you know, is they have something going on. Where'd their existing customer base come from? Let's maximize that. Any company, I'm always going to look at those customer referrals. Technician sales and upsells are a big one. I know some people get a little uneasy with that, where if you push too hard, you put pressure on the technicians, they get stressed out. Some technicians cannot sell. You know, so you want to have something, the ones that can, to benefit that, you know, and maybe they can add an extra $20,000 a year on their pay by upselling clients. Great. As a business owner, you got to decide, if you have a technician who cannot sell, you know, are you going to keep that technician? And that's going to be a very personal decision. I've got some clients that say, no, that is part of our culture. You need to sell. And the number might be low. It might be, you know, one customer a week that they've got to sell. But that's our base, you know, 4 or 5 a month. You have to do that or you're not going to be an employee here. You know, I'm torn on that. You know, when I had my business, I had one technician. You know, people would say, man, he is an ox. He would work 12-hour days in the heat and he just could not stop him. But where we would have even a, you know, as hot of a lead as you can have, where a neighbor said, hey, you know, I got referred over, you know, they said, you guys are great. We want to start service. We'd send him just to get the signature on the paperwork. And he had a 0% close rate, you know, and it was in the neighborhood. So it was really tempting just to, hey, have him swing by, get the paperwork signed. He had no interpersonal skills whatsoever. You know, super nice guy, but to put it bluntly, kind of that bland personality. And that's where the customers just did not like it. You know, but that's not everybody. You're probably going to have a couple of those technicians at the bottom. If you got 10 techs, you might have one or two like that. You've got a lot of people in the middle who can do an okay job selling if we push them a bit. That's who we want to motivate. And then maybe you have that one or two top people that you might even say, you know what, I need to move them to sales full time. You know, they're doing awesome. So I would start with that. And I know what everybody really wants to hear is like, hey, what works? You know, Facebook, Google, you know, LSA, et cetera. I've got clients that are successful on all of it. And I will say, even myself, I've scratched my head a little bit on it. And I'm sure you probably have too, looking, like you mentioned, at these different markets around the country. And you're just like, wow, this one company is just killing it on Facebook and just dominating. And everybody else is trying in different markets and it's just not working for them. I do like Facebook if it all comes together and it's working for you and in your market. That's where I see just insane success at very low cost. You know, Google, just by the way it's set up, is typically that bidding war that's going up. If you're paying for pay-per-click, people are going to bid more than they can afford inevitably. And you might find that niche and it works for a little while and then it goes up. I'm not a fan of the referral sites. I'm hesitant to say any of them, but you know, like the Angies and the type like that. Hopefully they're not watching, but generally I see more failure on stuff like that. You know, the good organic growth, you know, and we talked about putting good information on your website. And I know most web people don't agree with me. I'm curious to hear your opinion too, but even if you are the top ranked organic company for pest control, you're not even on the first page anymore. You know, you've got the map pack and you've got a couple sponsored pages on the first and second page. So for the companies that spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on getting that organic content, are they really getting a return on their money? And that's something that's going to be measured in years. So a young company, usually I'm going to say, hey, that's probably not where you want to spend all your money on that. That's going to be long term. But what is going to build your business this year? And focus on things like that.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you there. I would say there's a lot of people that come to Wolfpack and they just say, oh, I want SEO. And one of our first questions is like, okay, why? What did you hear? Because, you know, oftentimes maybe they are limited on their budget. Maybe they're newer. Maybe they're smaller, right? And I definitely don't want to spend all of their money just on SEO because SEO is very labor intensive. The software is very expensive. And so it's just naturally going to be very expensive. And then compounding on that, like you mentioned, Joe, it's just going to take sometimes multiple years before you see the return on investment for it. Yeah, there's some quick gains that you can make, but yeah, you're totally right too. Now, if anybody searches online these days, you have the AI summary, then you have advertisements, then you have local service ads, and then you have the map pack, and then finally you get organics. But even by now, today on Google and the regular organics, like the traditional Google search stuff, they try and everybody can start paying attention to this. If you actually look at like the top five, top three links in the regular organic section, they're all mixed. So they'll throw in like a Yelp or Home Advisor or something like that. And then they'll throw in like one or two local companies. And then they'll throw in something like the University of Florida or some like really authoritative like long form article rather than like, oh, these are all the top five pest control companies in the area. They really like to give users the choice of like what they want to choose. So I'm right with you there. And in terms of the other strategies, like I would agree, like Google Ads definitely can work, but there's a lot of people that don't know when to stop or try to do it on their own. They don't know what they're spending, and then they just end up, you know, spending and overbidding. And Facebook, obviously, when you hire the right digital marketing agency, or if you're a wizard with Facebook ads, can definitely work as well. I want to hear from you on, and this will be one of my last questions for you. I want to know from you, door to door or digital?
Oh, it's...
Pick one.
Yeah, me personally. So my personal opinion, I would rather see digital over door to door. I have a lot of clients that are successful on the door to door. So somebody that is to their company culture, you can't argue with it. I mean, what Aptiv Pest Control, where they just sold like 50% stake in the past couple of years, and they're a $500 million company. And I think it was 5 or 8 years that they grew. You can't show a non-door-to-door company that has grown that fast. So depending on how you measure it, the door-to-door growth is insane. I just keep thinking it's a bubble that's got to burst, that these homeowners are going to be fighting. You know, Florida, for example, we got the bill that, you know, you could press charges, criminal charges against somebody. You know, it's not a law, but a bill proposed that if you have a no soliciting sign, you know, they'll go to jail for it. So there's increasing backlash, but I've been expecting that over the past 5 years and it hasn't happened. So I think at some point that's where just the doors are going to get knocked on so much. There's going to be less and less return, but we haven't seen that yet. If you want purely money, yeah, door to door probably is your way to go, but for long-term stable growth, definitely digital. And that's more what I'm for. I want to see you making money, not just today, but long-term and even, you know, into retirement and your next generation having a good stable company.
Do you think that door to door has gotten such a good, like, and I understand like the many bad parts of it, because obviously I'm biased because we're running a digital marketing agency here too, but like I have people come to my door and leaving me stuff and I may not be home, and that just bothers the crap out of me. When somebody comes up to my door and is like ringing the doorbell when I'm not home, I'm just like, get off my property, you know? But so getting outside of that, do you think that people are so successful with door-to-door and like take, for example, Aptiv or any of these other companies because the model is there and they know like X in, Y out, like this is what you're going to do and this is going to be your investment. These are the metrics that you're going to hit compared to digital. It's a little bit of a black box. You got to hire the right digital marketing agency. You got to be in the right local market. You got to be on the right platform within your local market because LSAs may not work for you. So then you have to switch over to Google search ads. And even that might not work for you. Maybe it does for 6 months, but then it's priced too high. Would you kind of agree with that?
Yeah. And I think in the beginning, the door-to-door can be kind of a black hole too for a company that just says, we're going to get into door-to-door. You know, if they really don't know what they're doing and just say, I'm going to hire 10 guys, sales positions are the hardest to hire for. I think it's easier to hire a service manager or branch manager than sales position. Can they perform, you know, or do they go out and they work 1 month and they've sold a Chinese restaurant for $99? You know, that's not going to feed them. It's not going to feed anybody else. I had one client, they asked me to sit in on a termination meeting. They just need a second person. And they had a salesperson that was 3 months and they hadn't sold anything. And that's where I was like, why did this get so far? You know, why wasn't there coaching and anything else? And probably at the end of the month, it's like, hey, we've really got to look at what's going on here and, you know, or pull the plug in the next 2 weeks. So it's there is a black hole there. But I do see for the ones that are successful, that's where they'll say, hey, newer or not very good door-to-door people might sell one or two a day. If they're doing decent, they're selling 3 to 5. You know, our top performers are selling like 8 to 10 a day. And then you start running the math. And there's typically add-ons, you know, where it's mostly general pests because it's easy to train the salespeople. It's easy to train your technicians. It's easy to scale like Aptiv did. You're not getting into lawn. A lot of them don't even get into termites. But if you're doing that and they see, hey, it's an average $1,000 customer value and you've got these technicians that are going out, you know, say 20 days a month, if they're just, you know, working a basic, you know, Monday through Friday, or not technicians, but sales inspectors. And if they can sell 3 a day, you know, now every single one is 3,000 revenue per day, you know, and then that's 15,000 per week, 60,000 per month. And you're seeing that revenue number just skyrocketing. So I think once they get their feet under them and they figure out what they're doing, but I do have several clients that have tried it and just said, you know what, it didn't work for us. And they backed off of it. But yeah, I agree with your take on the digital is, yeah, there's a ton of empty promises out there. And there's a lot that you can't measure it very easily. You know, the web companies are measuring it for you a lot of times. And hey, we did a great job. You know, look at what we've done this month. You know, but what is your true ROI? And to me, that's the key. You know, if you're total everything said and done in marketing, if you're spending, you know, that $15,000, you know, well, first, what was your budget? Okay, it was $15,000. That's great. What did you get? Is it going to take you 10 years to recoup that? Is it a whole bunch of one-time services? This industry was built on recurring revenue. So, you know, how many, you know, general household pest control accounts are you bringing into me? That's what I'm looking at from my end.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, Joe, we've been talking for quite some time. I want to get into the last question, which is, where's Joe going today? It seems like every company in the world, every pest control company, pest management company that are doing APM, that's the terminology we're using, APM, needs to work with you. And where's Joe going? How can people find you?
All right. And either my website, pestcontrolconsultant.com. I'm on Facebook in the pest control groups, Pest Cemetery, et cetera. My phone number, I don't mind even giving out, 561-628-2696. Feel free, give me a call, see what I can do to help you. And we're going for the near future. Definitely the bulk of my work, probably about 2/3 of what I do, is working with the pest control companies, mostly those retainer clients that I meet with 2 to 4 times a month. And we're working on everything we discussed here, how to take them to the next level from the technical side to the business side. About that last third is where I'll do kind of the a la carte work, the inspecting the cruise ships, you know, other facilities. I've got one I'm going to that's a very, very high-end production. You know, one, I can't say what kind they do, but you know, everybody's in the white suits and clean rooms and they got bed bugs in there. So then trying to figure out, hey, where are they coming from? What are we going to do? You know, you can't just go in and spray chemicals. So I'm looking at that tomorrow. And then I'm doing some, you know, training meetings for the University of Florida. So in the coming year, you know, I expect to do, you know, just more of the same. I grow my business just like I'd expect a pest control business. I want to see probably about a 20% growth every year. And, you know, any more than that, it starts to turn into crazy chaos, but take it to the next level and keep going from there. You know, you didn't get to meet my wife today, but she is an attorney. So she helps with a lot of the pest control contracts and form letters and, you know, any kind of general counsel type things like that we need to. But it's a good life. We're blessed.
What an amazing duo. That's awesome. Well, Joe, this has been an amazing masterclass. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Marketing Alpha podcast with Joe. Joe, thank you for being here. We appreciate you.
Thank you, everybody. Take care.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Alpha Marketing. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with other business owners and marketers. Your support enables us to continue bringing you actionable advice and the tools you need to thrive. Join us next time for more insights with Aaron Shishilla and keep striving to be the alpha in your market.